Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Well, we had intended last hour to talk some about the Democrat National Convention, and we did some, the breaking news story out of France this morning changed all that. What happened in France today, again, this is a story that I don't want children shouldn't have to deal with, there was a church in rural France, and a priest, a Catholic church, a priest, 80-year-old priest, was conducting mass.
Which usually in most Catholic churches is every morning. So a lot of Protestants are saying, they had church in the morning? Well, they have mass in the morning.
Every morning.
Yes, and so...
So they're having their mass service.
Yeah, between 9 and 11 a.m. in, right. You know, in France, their time.
So you have an 80-year-old Catholic priest, and these several men, Islamic jihadists, go into the church, and they make him get on his knees. They get out the video camera, and then they cut his head off, and... They say Allah Akbar, which is what all these Muslim terrorists say as they commit their acts of jihad or their acts of terrorism. And the reason they say that, you might go, what does that mean? Well, that's Arabic for God is great. So when they commit these acts like cutting the priest's head off and they say Allah Akbar, these Muslim men, usually it's Muslim men almost always, they think they're doing this to honor Allah, which is their name for God. It's a monotheistic religion, Islam. They believe in one God, and his name is Allah, and his prophet was Muhammad. And so, and their holy book is the Quran. So, these people believe the Quran teaches them to go out and commit murder or slay the infidel, is what the Quran says, wherever you may find him. I may be paraphrasing that Quranic verse, but anyway, so that's their motivation. If you're wondering why do they say Allah Akbar, that's kind of, why would you say God is great while you're cutting a priest's head off? Because they think Allah is pleased with them when they do this type of thing. I'm just trying to, you know, I'm not trying to be too talking down to folks. I'm just trying to help people understand, because you don't get this from the mainstream media or any kind of, or political leaders. They won't talk about this stuff. They'll just use catchphrases like, Islam is a religion of peace. That's a catchphrase. They won't go any deeper than that, because if you do go deeper than that, then you have to explain some things. Why is it that all the terrorists are Muslims? Are they all just crazy? You know, all on drugs? They all have bad childhood experiences? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No, what is a common denominator? And why is it mostly young men who do these things? Because they think they're going to die and go to paradise and with 70 virgins to live in sexual immorality for I don't know how long exactly. But, I mean, that is their...
Well, all eternity.
All eternity.
Yeah.
So that, you wonder, how can somebody blow themselves up? Well, that is, naturally, that goes against human nature. We all have a survival... a desire to live that's given to us by God. So you have to overcome that. That's why more Muslim people don't blow themselves up than they do, and there's a lot of them that do, is because they can't overcome that
right
instinct to live. But anyway, that's what happened in France today. And if you live in France, Ed, you have to say, or Germany now, or anywhere in Europe, you have to go, are we safe? anywhere from these Islamic jihadists.
Well, and that, as we were talking about before the break, that's the whole point of terrorism, is you want to bring the population of your enemy into terror. You want them to live in fear, and the idea is that's one way you get them to submit to Islam. Now, this is the way Islam spread. A lot of people say, well, but a lot of these villages and little towns and cities, as Muhammad himself was approaching with his army, willingly surrendered. Well, that's because you had the following choices. You could fight, and the Arab armies that Muhammad raised were some of the finest in the world at that time. So we could fight, but we're probably going to lose, and then we'll be slaughtered and our women and children carried off into slavery. Or we can submit, and you submit in one of two ways. You become a kind of vassal state in which you pay tribute, but it's going to be very expensive, or you convert to Islam. So, yeah, a lot of these communities did willingly submit, but their options were limited. And the reason that a lot of them submitted is because they were afraid. And that is the point of terror. And it's not just limited to Arabs. It's not just limited to Muslims. Genghis Khan did the same thing. Huns, Mongols, it didn't matter.
You mean terrorism, acts of terrorism are not isolated in history just to jihadis.
Right. You don't have to fight in every city against every city if they are so afraid they're willing to give up. And, you know, Genghis Khan, they used to stack, talking about cutting off heads, they used to create huge pyramids of the heads of their victims, and they would leave it outside a city that they burnt to the ground, and people in the countryside would see it, and they wouldn't
it's
dare.
It's kind of like crucifixion.
Yes.
In the time of Jesus.
That's right. It's a
You see that, you paralyze the rebellion,
right,
in people.
It's a weapon of intimidation and terror, and that's what terrorism is meant to do, and that's what's happening in France and Germany. It's starting to happen on our own soil, is you want to create so much fear that people willingly submit and convert.
Another thing about this is I think we're under the false impression that if, you know, whatever the latest name of the group is, be it Al-Qaeda or Boko Haram or ISIS, if we defeat them militarily, that's going to be the end of jihad.
Right.
And that's, I'm sorry to say, that is just not true. When the president of France's reaction to this priest in France having his head cut off today by the Islamic jihadist is, we're to say France is at war with ISIS, it is true on one level, but this was done by probably people who live, Islamic jihadists who live in France.
Well, one attacker lived locally.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, it's convenient now almost for this French president to say we're at war with ISIS, as if we need to send more warplanes or more troops or whatever the case may be over to Syria and Iraq so we can fight these guys. No, that's not going to do it altogether. That may be helpful. I'm sure it would to defeat ISIS in those countries. But these people don't have to be attached to a group like ISIS or Al-Qaeda or anything else. It's the fact that they are Muslim in and of itself who subscribe to this jihadi view of their religion. That is the problem. But if you're a leader in a country and you subscribe to political correctness, you don't want to say that publicly, even though the whole world knows it's true.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So to your point earlier, political correctness makes you blind yourself. You have to trick your own brain. You have to trick your own brain into denial, to saying something isn't so, even though my brain knows it is so. That's a part of political
correctness. Well, this is a great point you're making, because it's, I guess, supposedly comforting to let the French populace know when President Francois Hollande says we're at war with ISIS. over there.
Yes.
But it's right. not comforting if you say, but we've got a bunch of Muslims
living
in, this
in our
country,
own country,
and a certain percentage of those subscribe to the ISIS ideology, and they could be living down the street from you. And boy, look what happened to this 84-year-old priest who was beheaded in church conducting mass this morning.
By a local.
Yeah, by a local. So that does not make the French populace feel safe.
Right.
Because you don't know where the next attack's coming from.
Right.
And
I
it's
think
here,
it's
not over there.
It's convenient to blame ISIS in Syria. And we're going to go fight those bad guys over there because, look, they cut the priest's head off today in our own.
Right.
No. What you're going to have to deal with, the reality is, it's an ideology. Doesn't have to have a group associated with it. You see what the guy did down in Florida, in Orlando, the Muslim jihadist down there. Killed all those people at that gay nightclub.
Right.
Well, he was operating under an ideology.
Right. Which is why they can pop up anywhere.
Right.
And for the Obama administration to and the PC left to always talk about the lone wolf. That's a misconception. Or, you know, either knowingly or unknowingly, they are making it seem as if these are just lone whack jobs. No, these are people who have subscribed to an ideology. And they're acting accordingly.
That's why the Obama administration won't ever say what the motivation of the people are. Like the guy who killed all the military recruiters in Chattanooga?
Right.
He was an Islamic jihadist, and the whole world knew it, and the FBI is going, we just don't know.
Right.
We just don't know what the motivation was.
Or you'll get, it was an act of workplace violence.
Right. Everybody knows that's not true. That's what political correctness does.
Right.
It makes you deny reality.
Right.
You have to trick your brain in some cases.
Let's pretend that the emperor has clothes.
Exactly. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Our next guest.
Yes, is Virginia Prodan, who's an international human rights attorney. Also, she is an allied attorney with Alliance Defending Freedom, a fine group. Our listeners are well aware of ADF's work. Virginia is also the author of a book, Saving My Assassin. It is a memoir of her life in Romania. Virginia, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, Virginia, tell us, it's an extraordinary title for the book, Saving My Assassin. Now, you were a human rights attorney in communist Romania. Tell us, you know, what years you were over there and what that was like living. That was a brutal dictatorship, wasn't it?
Yes, you're right. You're right, Tim. It was a very brutal dictatorship of Nicolae Ceausescu. As a child, I grew up under communist regime, and I knew nothing but fear and lies. The entire world revolved around our dictator, our leader, Ceausescu, and he declared himself God, or that's what he told us, that he is God, and his word we had to consider as our law. Everyone who questioned or disagreed with him was considered a traitor to the government and was either jailed, disappeared, or just killed. Nevertheless, we live in a constant state of anxiety and mistrust because anyone could arbitrarily be denounced by a neighbor, classmate, or a family member for so-called making anti-government statement for any time or any type of question that we might have. The government had spies even in the church.
You used to attend church as a young girl, so you grew up as a Christian living in a communist country. So if you said anything to a neighbor about Jesus or about the Christian faith, they could go to government authorities and denounce you as making someone who is making an anti-government statement?
In general, yes, that was true. But I did not grow up in a Christian family. I did not hear about Christ until later on, after I graduated from from law school, and I practiced several years. But I used to go from time to time at the Orthodox Church as a tradition, as something for Easter and Christmas. And even doing that was dangerous because the spy of the communist government were there taking your name down and presenting to the government as you being a church, quote-unquote, kind of people.
Well, tell us...
Not worshiping the government or the leader.
So tell us what it was like for those who... I mean, you have a chapter where your uncle told you a story about the little girl who lived next door. What was it like for people, Christians or non-Christians, living under this this brutal dictatorship?
We didn't have freedom. Everything around us was, in fact, I call communists and socialists the country where I work and when I live and the system that I grew up under, a land of lies and a prison land. A land of lies because truth was nowhere to be found. Like I said, a dictator considered himself God and his word was the law. And his word changed every single day according to his benefits and his desires. And it was a prison land because of the silence of people and lack of courage to stand up. That built a wall around their heart, their mind, and soon the dictator imprisoned them. Now, in the beginning, they imprisoned themselves because of fear, but then the dictator used that fear to imprison them. And I grew up questioning why people don't speak up, because I was able to know and understand the difference between the truth and the lies. And I decided that I will not live this kind of life. And because I consider, as a kid, having lawyers around me and noticing that people will ask lawyers questions and lawyers will have the answer, as a young kid, I thought the only way to find the truth is to go to law school. But God had a better plan.
Well, so Virginia, tell us a little bit about what you did as you, because we're kind of running out of time here. We got about 7 minutes. What you did after you got out of law school, and what the name of this book means, "Saving My Assassin."
I defended Christians and human rights cases. Christians in Romania that were put in jail before I started to defend them because they had a Bible or they share a Bible with others, or because they watch a movie, a Jesus movie, or churches because they ask for government to give them permit to maintain the church. And my cases became part of the United Nations report of violation of human rights in Romania and United States reports, Department of State reports. And for that reason, I exposed the government, and it was the government and the dictator were in danger not to receive the most favored nation status from United States. And for that reason, the government sent a so-called client, which in fact, it was a killer who came to my office to kill me. But with God's grace, I shared the gospel with him, and he's alive, and I'm alive.
So did he? So to walk us through that a little bit. How did you know he was there to kill you? Did he tell you this afterwards?
He came to the office. He came late in evening, exactly by the time everybody was gone, including my secretary. And the minute that he came in my office, he pulled up his gun and pointed towards me, and he said, We arrested you, we put under house arrest, we beat you, we did everything that was possible with you, but you don't listen. I'm here to finish the work, to kill you. And I knew that he was capable of doing that, and he was willing to do this. But by the grace of God, I shared the gospel with him, and he did not kill me. The gospel saved let's put it this way, save him and save me.
So he became a Christian right then and there, or did it? Was it later?
He became a Christian.
Now I got to say, if I was, I'm not sure how well I would do. I guess you just have to trust for the Holy Spirit to work through you. But someone has a gun out and says, "I'm here to kill you," and you are sharing the gospel. I'm kind of having a hard time asking this question. What was going through your mind? Were you saying, if I can convert this person, I'll live? Or were you just at peace sharing the gospel regardless of what happened?
Not even my idea. When I saw the gun and his desire, and I'm under 5 feet tall, and he was over 6'10" or something. And I was convinced that what he was saying and having the gun, that he will kill me. But I heard the Lord telling me to share the gospel. And I look, not that I was very aware that he is capable of killing me. And I was watching in front of me in like seconds my entire life and thinking about my kids. But somehow the Holy Spirit helped me to move that perspective from my own to the soul of the man who was in front of me, who was in need for Christ as much as I was in need for Christ when I didn't know him. So based on that, I started to share the gospel. It was God who moved me to do this, the Holy Spirit, not my desire, not at all.
We're out of time, Virginia. Let me just ask you this, just in 60 seconds or so, what do you live in Dallas, Texas now. What do you see happening in this country? Is you see anything happening that makes you believe that we're in danger of losing our liberties here?
Yes, we are in danger, and only if we stand up without fear. We have our priority messed up. We fear men instead of fearing God. We trust government instead of trusting God. We offend God, and we try not to offend anyone. We cannot be successful if we continue. We have to go back to God. And he said that we, as Christians, are the solution. He said, if my people, that it started with us, our success and our freedom in America will come from God, as it comes everywhere in the world. And we have to go return to God. With God, we are more than conquerors. And we have to resolve the fear that is in us. Give us our fear, and he will give us the power to walk with him and be victorious and protect freedom in America.
Well, Virginia, that is good preaching. I just appreciate that message. Our guest has been Virginia Prodan, Prodan. If you want to read this fascinating story that she's been telling us, she has put it in her book. It's from Tyndale Publishing. The title of it is Saving My Assassin, Virginia Prodan, Prodan. Virginia, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you so much for having me. God bless you.
God bless you.
All right, folks, thanks for being with us today on the program. I wish we had more positive things to talk about.
It was
about.
All sunshine and puppies today,
yeah,
wasn't it?
But it's so sad what happened in France. This 80-year-old priest beheaded by Islamic jihadists today in France. It's a shocking story that's breaking in the news. Another day in Europe, another attack.
Yeah.
And all right, folks, thanks for joining us. Have a good day. Keep listening to American Family Radio.